Hello, everybody. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We're going to be a little more serious today, maybe a little less laughter, because our main focus is on narcissism. My guest is Ross Rosenberg. He's a psychotherapist and the owner of Advanced Clinical Trainers and Clinical Care Consultants. This is a multi-location counseling center in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Ross was my guest last August. Welcome to the program, Ross. It's so nice to have you back again.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I want to share with the audience that you are doing some seminars. You just did a six-hour seminar on pathological narcissists, who they are and what to do about them, and also observe, don't absorb technique, neutralizing narcissistic abuse. And I can see why it takes 6 hours to do something.
Yeah, that's interesting.
This, and I looked over your outline. It's very thorough, and it shows what a good grasp you have of some deep psychological aspects around narcissism and all of the subsets. And then you're also the author and a book you sent me a couple of years ago, which I like so much, Human Magnet Syndrome. And in fact, your main website, Ross, is humanmagnetsyndrome.com. Is that the best way for people to learn more about you?
Yes. That website will link people to the other websites and where they can find out more about me.
Okay, good. And you still have, people can get this book on a Kindle through Amazon for the audio?
Yes. Well, in fact, the book is available on Amazon.com. But I ask people that if you want to buy the paperback version and you want to be more supportive of the author and
yes,
not the big multi-billion-dollar corporations, is buy the paperback version from the Human Magnet Syndrome website. But all of my video seminars and my book are available through the Human Magnet Syndrome. And it's the hub for the different websites that I have.
And your Human Magnet Syndrome has sold quite a bit over 30,000 copies.
Actually, it's around 37,000.
37.
And counting. Oops.
And counting. And published in Spanish and French.
Yes, in fact, it is published on Amazon in Spanish. And in January, a French publisher put a lot of time and energy into to rolling this out, and it will be available in French. And pretty excited about that.
Tell our listening audience, please, a little bit about what motivated you to write this book. We've discussed it in the past, Ross, but
sure.
We probably have new people listening. So what was the motivation for your writing the book?
Well, I mean, first, the whole title is the Human Magnet Syndrome, which why we love people who hurt us.
Yeah.
And I've always, I've been a fan of therapy, and it's probably why I became a therapist.
Yeah.
But after my second divorce with the second woman who I felt was narcissistic, I hit a bottom. I had so much shame, and it became a secret. And I finally decided somewhere along the line is that I have to figure out what's wrong with me, because it's so easy for codependents to blame the bad, nasty old narcissist and
yes.
say they're just unlucky and they just love too much and, they're too good, they're too altruistic. I figured out in my own therapy that there's something that happens between codependents who are lovers, givers, altruists, patient people, and narcissists who are self-centered and selfish. There's a dance. There's an energy that pulls, a magnetism that pulls the two together. And once I figured out what I would call the Human Magnet Syndrome of why codependents are always attracted to narcissists, like the follower of a dance needs the leader of the dance and vice versa, I then realized, hey, the problem is with me. And that's when I started working in therapy, and I was able to resolve it and solve it and finally heal the wounds that kept me compelled to keep falling in love with narcissists. So that is the story of what prompted me to write this book, to share my discovery that the only way that we can get better, the only way that we can heal, is to understand that codependency, or now I call it self-love deficit disorder, the wounds we carry because of what happened to us as children with our narcissistic parent. And until we heal those wounds, we will be playing that role of the forgiving patient dance partner who wants the controlling narcissistic partner.
Good relationships, of course, are based on reciprocity. And, you know, you listen attentively and empathically to the other person's joys and sorrows, for example. And he or she listens to yours. But it seems like, and I bet you experience this with your former wives, with narcissists, it's a one-way street. And
absolutely,
a steady diet of this can be toxic to your sense of self.
Absolutely. By definition, people would, and there's different, in my six-hour seminar that you spoke about earlier in the intro, I talk specifically that narcissism is very complicated. There's many, many faces of narcissism. I call it pathological narcissism. But what ties all of the different faces of narcissism together is the selfishness, the self-centeredness, and these people in relationships do not practice mutuality or reciprocity. But what is very confusing is that there are some narcissists, like the covert narcissists, they pretend to be mutual and reciprocal, and they confuse the codependent. But it's all, as you say, mutuality is something that healthy people do in relationships. And it's got to be a two-way street. The narcissist can't do that unless somehow being mutual serves their need completely.
Yes, and we seem to have a president-elect in Donald Trump who has aspects of NPD, narcissistic personality disorder. And
yes,
before he was president-elect last August, we talked a little bit about this. And if any people want to hear that show, go to the archives and you will find it. The beginning of August. Let's see. Mm-hmm. It was August the 9th, yes, of this year. So, what about the president-elect Trump's NPD? And then we're going to go on to some of the other aspects that you presented recently in your six-hour seminar.
Well, before I say anything about Donald Trump, the word president-elect is a little bit disturbing because I'm not yet ready to accept the reality of what happened, is that, and this is important for your listeners to hear, and it got me in trouble a little bit on my Facebook page, but mm-hmm. President-elect Trump is an endemic of the scourge that has embraced our country. The only reason he was able to be elected was his message resonated with a group of people that saw it as being normal and acceptable. So the problem is, here's a person who has narcissistic personality disorder, and those who shared his views were able to come out of the dark, out of the closet, and say, here's a man that represents us. And so this is a man that has a personality disorder, and all of the psychological evidence points to it without any doubt. And he was able to manipulate the people who were vulnerable. I mean, someone told me that there's a whole website now, a whole Tumblr website of people who basically woke up the next morning and said, I can't believe I voted for him because he's doing exactly what he wasn't supposed to do. he was able to, thanks to the media and the fake news, through his manipulative narcissistic machine, was able to tap into other narcissists and manipulate other vulnerable people who were vulnerable to his narcissistic propaganda.
It's pretty shocking. And in terms of the people listening to him and ended up voting for him, it's true that Trump will say whatever he feels is good for him at any given time, what he feels most comfortable. He probably will lie if that's going to serve his purposes. And, I read that while it's important to pretend good faith and remind him of promises, as Bernie Sanders and others are doing, that's for his supporters so they can see the inconsistency as it comes. And he won't care.
Right.
He probably won't care. So,
but by definition, just to be clear, by definition, a pathological narcissist doesn't care because they don't have empathy. They don't have the true sense of wanting to actually be a part of a relationship in which there's a responsibility taken that healthy people. So it's not that they don't care; they're unable to care, and they feel justified for not caring. So he only cares for people, groups, or issues that reflect well on him. And the fact that he was able to get so many people the issue is his divisive, malignant narcissism was not only able to convince people that he was a good guy, but he was smart enough to be able to split. It's almost like in a dysfunctional family. The way that you get power is you turn people against each other and you start to undermine everyone by telling one person that the other person's bad. He was able to get a huge segment of the American population to believe that Hillary Clinton was a horrible person. Now, she's an imperfect person, perhaps dishonest and participated in illegal activities, but he was so successful at manipulating others to paint a picture of her that made her evil. And that's how brilliant his pathological narcissism was.
You make so many good points. You clearly have thought a great deal about this, and some of it also helped you prepare for your most recent seminar on this. This kind of narcissism is not curable, and it's barely treatable.
That's absolutely right. There are treatments for narcissistic personality disorder, but the problem is for any treatment to work, you have to first know you have a problem, and narcissists, by definition, don't believe they have a problem and blame others for the very same problem they have, which is Donald Trump. If you listen to Donald Trump rail against Hillary, and you can just do segments of what he's saying, they're everything that he doesn't like are really reflections of him. So to find yourself in therapy, you have to realize there's something wrong and you need to work on it. And it's so difficult and improbable for narcissists to get there. And if they do, it's usually to save their ass. That they've gotten in trouble, they've been arrested, they've lost their job, and so they will go into therapy just in order to somehow prove to the world that, they're okay. But when they're in therapy, and if they're not able to control the therapist, the therapist either terminates the therapy or they quit. Or they're able to find, and this is the dangerous part, the narcissist who goes to therapy are able to find therapists who are codependent, who haven't done their own work, who play out their own unresolved role in codependency, and they just let the narcissist vent the whole time. The narcissist feels validated and affirmed because he's going to therapy. The therapist is just listening and so it's not really therapy, but the narcissist gets to believe it is.
Oh, boy. I've, over the 30-plus years I've been a therapist, I have had a few of those, but I am not a codependent. I'm actually a very well-balanced therapist mm-hmm. coming out of, lucky me, secure attachment, growing up in a really healthy family. So I will call the narcissists on their behavior, and sometimes mm-hmm. they won't stay.
Absolutely. As soon as you try to hold a narcissistic accountable, they have a mm-hmm. narcissistic injury. In other mm-hmm. words, they immediately flash into anger, resentment, and instead of feeling the wound that they're actually experiencing and the shame because of it, they reflexively, automatically respond back by telling you or the person who's threatening them what's wrong with them. We call that a projection.
That's
so when
right.
you call a narcissist, you're being selfish, you're interrupting too much, then they get mad and said, well, no, you're the selfish one. You're the one who's interrupting.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't accept constructive feedback or criticism, so they lash out and they attack the person and try to establish dominance and control by either dominating the person or making the other person feel bad or avoid the consequence of further punishment.
So if we take this out of the therapy realm for a minute, and so our listeners, if they encounter a narcissist, you can influence this person, male or female, by making him or her feel good. And, you know, in the case of Donald Trump, there are already people like Bannon who appear ready to use him for their own needs.
People, and I said this a few minutes ago, is he is quite attractive and quite the hero to mm-hmm. people who whose point of view resonates with Trump's point of view and vice versa. So he's a brilliant man. He's not going to get someone with a lot of ethics and morals. He's going to find someone who is steeped deep in rage and anger and vindictive narcissism, and mm-hmm. that's going to be his campaign manager. And you know, the few times that Bannon was interviewed, and he mm-hmm. was, I think, and don't quote me, but he was asked who are his heroes, he said Darth Vader, Cheney, and someone else. And
oh, my. I did not hear that interview.
Those are moments that are a window into someone's psyche. So he yeah. was able to find someone who understood. I mean, you think of Hitler. Hitler needed Goebbels. I mean, and you think of any person, any tyrant or fascist, they, in order to perpetuate their propaganda and maintain power and control over a huge mass of people, you need to have someone that can turn people against the other group or mm-hmm. turn their opinions. And so I don't know much about Bannon, but I'm just assuming that all the people that helped Trump get elected understood intuitively Trump's divisive, malignantly narcissistic messages mm-hmm. and language.
You, I looked over your slides for your six-hour seminar, and you have one very interesting section, the historically malignant narcissists. And mm-hmm. you just mentioned Hitler, but talk about some of the others that you mentioned, because I found it fascinating.
Yeah, I actually have a video. In fact, I should tell your viewers that I have a YouTube channel that has 80
yeah.
videos that has yeah. a great deal of information, and there's one specifically on malignant narcissism. But mm-hmm. So many people think of Hitler and you know, Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein and these other murdering tyrants as sociopaths or people or psychopaths. But really, many of these were malignant narcissists. They mm-hmm. were able to cast themselves as the spokesperson for the oppressed people and gather people around and build support because someone else was controlling them and hurting them. And Hitler, comes from post-World War I, was able to turn Germany against his government and his people, and acted as the savior of the fatherland, and And once he rose to power, like malignant narcissists do, then to maintain power, they will do anything and everything to maintain that power, which includes murder. So what makes, you know, whether it's Castro, whether it's Gaddafi, what makes a malignant narcissist and not sociopaths is that they actually want to be in a relationship. They want to be loved. They want to be revered. The sociopath doesn't give a damn. It doesn't really care about relationships.
That's right.
So, and they will do anything and everything to maintain power and control once they get into that position of power and feel justified, because they feel in their twisted, malignantly narcissistic mind that they're doing something good for the greater good of the group of people that are in favor. But if those people should question them, and Stalin, one of the worst malignant narcissists ever, if they questioned them, they would be killed, executed. So the malignant narcissist is a combination of paranoia, sociopathy, and narcissism.
What a combination, huh?
Well, they're dangerous.
They're very dangerous, very dangerous. So you also talk in your book and in your presentations, and you're such a good presenter, and people can go and see you on YouTube, on your website. But talk about some of the NPD, narcissistic personality disorder subcategories. Talk a little bit more about some of the subcategories.
Okay, there are, so we have NPD as defined by medical science, and we've pretty much been talking about NPD or narcissistic personality disorder, but the subcategories include the covert narcissist, and they're the narcissists who are able to pretend to be nice and giving and loving, and sometimes they pretend to be codependent, and they're able to feign or fake this altruistic personality in order to gain what they need and to control others. But they don't really have the nurturing and altruism and empathy in a part of their human psyche, but they pretend in order to keep a job or to stay, you know, a host on a TV show or to maintain their job as a priest or a rabbi. But what makes the covert narcissists all wear a mask, and if you should try to take off the mask, and I have a video on YouTube, is don't take off the mask.
Well, yes.
They will do everything and anything to destroy you, because all of what they've earned and taken and manipulated in life was because of this persona of being nice, loving, and giving. And if you threaten that, they will turn against you. So the covert narcissist pretends to be the opposite, but really everything that they do is about them. You have the productive narcissist, and these are the people who are brilliant contributors to the world. You think of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Thomas Edison. They are so brilliant, but they're so narcissistic. They believe that they can change everything and that they are better than everyone. They believe that they are almost godlike. But what makes them productive narcissists is that they can actually do what they say. And that these are the people that change our world, and we know they're narcissists because in relationships with these people, they show that, you know, they don't really care about the individual person. They care about themselves. But we revere them because of what they've done for us. You know, what people don't want to think anything bad about Steve Jobs because everyone loves her, you know, with their iPhone.
And
a couple movies show that quite well. So we have covert, we have productive, we have malignant, which we just talked about.
Yes, we did.
And then we have what I call the garden variety narcissist, which is just a person that we've talked about who has narcissistic personality disorder. So those are the four subcategories.
And the garden variety, just say a little bit more about the garden variety, because I think that a lot of our listeners might have encountered the garden variety a little more often.
The garden variety is just the plain old person with narcissistic personality disorder. And all of the subcategories have this in them. They are selfish. They are self-centered. They are entitled. They think that they deserve everything. And if they don't get what they think they deserve, they are very angry and judgmental and reactive. And if they don't get special attention or special treatment, they rail against that person. That's the narcissistic injury.
That's right.
They are grandiose in their self-assessment. They think that they are smarter, more talented, more deserving than everyone else, and they, when they are not addressed or treated as such, they are angry. This is part of the entitlement.
I was going to say that entitlement really is a key aspect of the disorder.
Entitlement is it's the narcissism. It's the right. I am better than you. I deserve more than you, and you should recognize that. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you. And the grandiosity is the justification that you should see how important I am.
Mm-hmm.
They lack
with Trump, the rules don't apply to him.
All of the subcategories of narcissism are subcategories of garden variety narcissists.
Yes,
so,
I get
so
it.
Everything I'm saying about garden variety narcissists actually apply to the malignant narcissist, the productive narcissist,
yes,
and the covert narcissist, except they're played out differently. The garden variety narcissist lacks empathy, and they do love and care for people, but it has to be in a way that makes them feel good about themselves.
Yes.
And if someone should challenge them, their empathy is absent.
So with Donald Trump, we should expect that he only cares about himself and those he views as extensions of himself, like his children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
He can trust his children. They are extensions of him. I don't know. Somebody said Melania is probably an acquired item, not an extension.
Sure. I mean, come on. I mean, that's his third wife. I mean, again, another example of hypocrisy and projection. I mean, he has spent so much time and energy, you know, trying to expose Bill Clinton and his, you know, infidelity and his sexual acting out. But here's a man who I think, and don't quote me, but I know it's a fact, for one, cheated on at least one of his three wives.
Yeah.
And so the human magnet syndrome says that relationships happen unconsciously without us knowing. So there is no doubt that if anyone fell in love with Trump, and it wasn't an arranged marriage, it wasn't a financial deal, that person has to be codependent, because the chemistry experienced with human magnet syndrome relationships, codependents feel so excited and so enamored with the strength, the character, and the boldness of these narcissists, they don't see the pathological malignant side to them. So I could only assume that Melania, his wife, has to be on the codependent side, because if it's not because of money, prestige, because who else could find Donald Trump an attractive partner? Someone who has to have low self-esteem, someone who has to be easily controlled and made feel bad about themselves.
During the campaign, and now even more so, I have a negative, visceral reaction. I don't find him the least bit attractive. But I think what you say is...
Good thing we don't vote for attractiveness, because then no one would have got elected. But I'm just saying.
That's right, you're just saying.
I mean, and of course, that's kind of judgmental, so I apologize.
No, you can say it. Yeah, and...
But,
I thought it was going to be all over for Trump when the Access Hollywood tapes came out a few months ago, where he bragged about grabbing pussy, and that he was entitled to kiss a woman and that she liked it. And my goodness.
And it's an example, and it goes back to what I said earlier, is what Trump represents is more than what a narcissist can do. It's the collusion between a large segment of our population who is narcissistic, who have been waiting to get a to get a leader, someone to speak their language, mm-hmm. and so I listened to all these interviews, and I'll tell you, this is before the election, of course, and yeah. I would hear these people, and they would say, yeah, that's true, he did say that, but, you know, everyone makes mistakes, or he's a man, or it was locker room talk. So the narcissist people, or the people who have been fed the propaganda, the horrible propaganda about Hillary Clinton, and they take that information and they sort it through with their own value system. Mm. Well, this has nothing to do with how he's going to be as a president, because anyone who can say it doesn't matter, I promise you, they're missing something in their own psychological life. So this is a scourge. This is about the United States of America. It's not about Trump, because Trump could not get elected if people were healthy, because they would have been repelled and disgusted. Yeah. But the people he speaks to share those values, and they minimized it.
They minimized it. That's such a good point, Ross, that if we had a healthier population in the United States, he would have never gotten elected. People would have seen through it.
And another thing that's a little bit off topic is the fake news sites. I was just reading.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that.
These fake news, and this just came out in the news, there are a preponderance of fake news sites whose headquarters are in Europe, and they're done by these individuals who come from poor countries, who understand that if they can get a website to look like a real news site, and these kids make these websites look like a CNN or an AP News, mm-hmm. and they take this news and they create these headlines, and they rewrite the news to appeal to these zealot, super conservative, right-wing constituents, and they saw it as news. So these kids, I mean, Macedonia has an industry of the fake news companies. These folks who are not regulated are just creating these, and you see them on Facebook all the time. Our American public take these news sites and they take them as validation or confirmation that Trump is right. And that the Trump people, I don't know what, if they were complicitous with the fake news or just lucky. And then the other problem was our news companies were in bed with this guy. They were like hanging on to every one of his tweets, every one of his statements, and everyone heard about Trump all the time.
Yeah.
And yes.
Yes. They're hearing about him all the time. We had 18 months of it before the election.
And with enough propaganda, and we know this with almost every horrible, whether it's with Saddam Hussein, whether it's with Hitler, whether it's with Trump, you know, people are hurting, they're upset, and they hear this propaganda over and over again. And if they're miserable themselves and they're feeling disempowered, they're feeling, you know, unloved, they're feeling, you know, trampled upon, and here is this guy who is saying, you know, the Washington, D.C. elite are ruling this country, and I'm here to speak for you. And they're ready to believe the lies, the manipulation, and what we now find out, a tremendous coordinated effort of propaganda.
And I didn't really know about the coordinated effort of propaganda. I didn't know about the fake news sites, so this is illuminating. But people that voted in the U.S. for him are disenfranchised white guys who are not wanting to lose their jobs. And
actually, he did pretty well with women also.
And that's a very
important point. So, but this fake news element was so salient that Zuckerberg, the guy who owns Facebook, he said on public he recognizes that this was that Facebook was horribly responsible for this and wants to take action, but it's hard to control you know who's fake and who's real. But here is that the owner of Facebook is saying to us, he knows that his company was responsible in getting him elected. You have all these news corporations who are now saying, yes, we know we were responsible too. Mm-hmm. They were all suckered in. It's like after it's the morning after a horrible date, and you're waking up with a big hangover, and you're realizing, you know, WTF, what did I do?
And so
that's what we have to learn from it. And you know, we got 4 years, and the American public is, you know, is we learn, and we are good by nature, and I think we're going to learn a lesson and come back from this.
Well, you're optimistic, and so am I. But we've got to control as much as we can Donald Trump and the 4 years he has in the office, and we don't want him to get anywhere near the nuclear
phone. We have him in control, and we have the vice president, who is right wing also, who represents conservative. Homophobic, you know, racist point of views. He's brought in right wing conservative. He's done everything that he had said he wouldn't do. He wanted to clear the cesspool, Washington, of the cesspool of the lifers, of the career politicians, and he has filled his cabinet and appointed all of these folks that are. Are lifetime politicians who are insiders, and this is where everyone is waking up the next day saying, I can't believe I did this.
You know, as a sex therapist, I worry a lot. I heard that Pence, or I read that he even believed in conversion therapy, that you can do therapy and get a homosexual
Absolutely.
To become a heterosexual, and we know that is not possible. I also worry that the funding for Planned Parenthood will stop. I also worry that...
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I'm sure everything...
Yeah, abortions are legal, and then they'll become illegal again, and what a mess, if that happens, what a mess that will be. It's horrible for women. Horrible.
Oh, plus the attorney general that he picked... has extremely conservative point of views. There's going to be two upcoming slots for the Supreme Court. This is a very dark day for our American society, because this group of Americans are going to finally have a chance at putting their mark on the country as a whole.
There's no
divisiveness. I mean, we have Congress that is predominantly Republican, and we have the Senate is predominantly Republican. They don't, although they don't have a supermajority, which would be horrendous. What we have is a dangerous time in the world.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do?
You know, what we can do is we can do exactly what I tell everyone. The only way to combat narcissism is love your children, love your grandchildren. And narcissism is created by attachment trauma. It's created, are created by horrible harm from other narcissists during their formative years. And the only way we can make America a safer place, free from narcissists, is to make sure that our children are raised with love, respect, and care, and don't have to be torn down and ripped apart so that they grow up to hate themselves and therefore project hate onto others. And then set boundaries and protect yourself as an adult and try to do what we're all trying to do already.
Yeah, so many kids are harmed by parents who life is somehow a competition. And they don't hold their kids and love them enough, and so these kids have a lot of trouble self-soothing, and they're just, it's all about me and how and can I be better, and so they don't know enough about empathy.
Right. Well, but you know, people point about the millennials, and there are this whole group of spoiled kids. And, you know, there are some cohort or generational influences that make millennials different. But the truth of the matter is, it's not the millennials that are the problem. It's the millennials who happen to be narcissistic, and I don't believe that millennials by nature are narcissistic. They're just different. Every generation is different. But those who are were created. And so the problems with the millennials were their parents, because they are just products. And so the next generation can be changed if we can just, you know, and of course it's an ambition that can never probably be actualized, but we have to raise healthier children and not tear them apart, because these kids are representing the world in which they were raised.
They are, and so people may develop this malignant self-regard as children in the context of their relationships.
Yeah, but yet the children don't develop narcissism. The children are traumatized by the narcissists are victims of horrific childhood trauma during their attachment years.
And neglect.
It's neglect or abuse
or abuse,
deprivation. And then that is the cauldron within which the narcissism is crystallized and turns into their way of life, their way of thinking, their perceptions, their beliefs, their morals. And the only way to change, if you understand that pathological narcissism doesn't change because of the nature of it, the best we can do is the next generation.
Yeah.
And that is to love our children and make them feel safe and not turn themselves against themselves.
Because high narcissism is, of course, not the same as high self-esteem. They might be weakly related, but they're different. And I read about a study where they found that when mothers and fathers are warm and affectionate and spending time with their kids and showing interest in their activities, then the children gradually internalize the belief that they're worthy individuals. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, and so they have core self-esteem, and so this doesn't spill over into narcissism. By contrast, you know, the parental over-evaluation, placing the children on a pedestal, then that can promote narcissistic traits.
Absolutely, and that's an important distinction, is that pathological narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder, and which includes any of the subtypes, is not caused by spoiling a kid, by overindulging him. A unbalanced, selfish kid, maybe an entitled kid, will turn into a selfish, entitled adult. But narcissism is on a continuum, and I write about this in the Human Magnet Syndrome book. There's a continuum of self, and there's a continuum of narcissism, and there's a continuum of caretaking. And it's all what makes something a personality disorder or pathological narcissism is when this selfishness is so severe that you're not conscious of it and you don't take responsibility for it. So there is a range of narcissism or selfishness that comes from the way we're raised, or raised of sacrificing or caretaking, that comes from the way we're raised, but it doesn't always mean someone's codependent or pathologically narcissistic. You can have a friend or a colleague, a brother, a lover who is narcissistic, but they have the ability to take ownership of their problems but still behave that way. So it's not all black and white.
No, it's not all black and white. And one of the brilliant things about your book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, is that you present that very well. You look at it really on a continuum, which of course it is. Because, you know, most of my practice are couples. I do see individuals too.
Yes.
But whenever couples are in high conflict, they do become more self-centered. And So, and sometimes they experience so much rage that they lean over to that more narcissistic side, and especially if they saw that modeled in their mm-hmm. parents.
Yes.
So it's a generational thing. A moment of bragging, you know, I feel so fortunate that I grew up in secure attachment, and I raised my daughter and son in secure attachment, and now I get to see my daughter and her husband raise their two little boys, my grandsons, who are 2 and 6,
mm-hmm.
and they were just here for a visit from Victoria, and these boys are just turning, you know, they're only 4 and 6, but they're turning out so well, and they have compassion, and they have empathy. So it is a generational thing. So if somebody is not so fortunate, actually like yourself, to come out of such a healthy kind of family of origin, then you need to do the
work. I did not come out of a healthy family of origin. But
well, I know. That's what I'm saying. You did not.
Oh, okay.
And but you did the work. You did therapy.
Yes.
You did the work.
Mm-hmm.
You figured it out. It inspired your book.
Right.
And, you talk about in your book, it's been a while since I've read your book, but I loved it. You had a very difficult father.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, but before I go do that, what you're
yeah,
talking about
course.
With your kids, what you talk about with your grandkids and your children reminds me of what my grandpa used to say, you know, the apple mm-hmm. doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
And of course he would always say that when he was bragging about his grandkids. And
yeah.
But really our children are always a reflection of what's best and what's worse in us as parents. And
mm-hmm.
because no parent is perfect, the best parent, what I call the normal healthy parent,
mm-hmm.
keeps in front of their problems and tries to keep learning. And my father, his father was a ladies' man, a professional gambler, and knocked my grandmother up. And and by the time he was one, she divorced him, and he tried to take her money. And he saw this guy for a period of maybe no more than 3 or 4 times his whole life, and was raised by an extremely abusive grandmother. So here's a guy who is the perfect example of a narcissist being created. And he gets married like most narcissists want to, and marries. He finds a super codependent woman.
Right.
Again, my mom was raised by a narcissist. When you read the Human Magnet Syndrome, you start to say this fits everywhere. Every narcissist you know is in a relationship or wants to be in a relationship, and it could only be with a codependent.
Yeah.
But my father was severely narcissistic, and when you didn't go against him, he was nicer to you. And I was the type of person, perhaps I was born with this personality type, but when I turned 13, I started to say no.
Uh-huh.
I started to try to stand up for what I thought was right, and I started to piss him off, and that was the beginning of the end of our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
My other siblings handled it differently, and I always was the outsider, always the one to whom he was trying to protect himself, and I was always the one that was trying to, like, out him. It was a bad combination of a kid who believed in justice, who wanted to try to expose people for doing wrong, and had a father that could turn people against you and change their narrative about you. And so I grew up not getting much, if any, unconditional love from my dad and my mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, just trying to keep her head above water in the crazy relationship of our family.
Yes. Oh, but see, you had a vision at 13 that this wasn't right, and so you probably have a very well-developed sense of justice.
That's why I'm so freaking pissed off at this election.
Of course, of course.
I believe that, you know, we need to take care of each other, and we need to be honest. We need to be integrity based. And unfortunately, we didn't have a real good opposite candidate from Trump, an imperfect candidate. But the like my father, I mean, I went into clinical depression, and I know I speak for millions of people. After the election, I went into clinical depression for 5 days, and my wife had no idea what was going on. And one day, after the third day, I figured it out. And I want to share this with your listeners, is it duplicated my childhood. My dad was the fake news. In fact, I'm just making this connection now. He told everyone his version of the story in order to get his power, and his version was Ross and was a bad kid, and anyone that went against him were bad. And he talked about what other people wanted to hear, and the family members sucked it up. And so that's the justice, is the codependents, they keep fighting with these narcissists. And George Bernard Shaw said, you know, never wrestle with pigs, you'll get dirty. And besides, pigs like it.
I love that quote.
The narcissist craves the fight.
Yeah, they do.
And I learned my observe, don't absorb technique, which is on my training that we talked about, the six-hour training, as a way to finally detach from the fight, because I kept fighting people that wanted me to fight. And by the nature of me trying to defend myself, I actually was weakening myself.
Oh, you have done some really deep work. Plus, you have the advantage of having a very good brain and being articulate.
Oh, thank you. It's You're
wonderful.
Not so bad yourself there.
Oh, well, thank you. But so another feature of a narcissist, and you've talked about it, is don't cross the narcissist because he is entirely dependent on others' opinions, and the narcissist can act like a cornered animal if he or she feels threatened. And, you know, there is some...
I have a YouTube video out there that basically says, don't take the mask off a covert narcissist and run. I also wrote an article, something about that, on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And you might want to, and that was my problem, is I always wanted to take the mask off and show everyone what's bad about them. Mm. But they have so much writing on their duplicity and their carefully engineered and disguised real selves that they'll do almost anything to discredit you and hurt you. You have more to lose to get into that wrestling ring because the pig, as we looked at George Bernard Shaw saying, the pig loves wrestling and is good at wrestling and doesn't mind getting dirty.
That's right.
The codependent, the people in the world, they don't want to fight. They just want the truth. And they, because of that, they get their ass kicked all the time. And I always got my ass served on a platter. And then when I realized that the fighting itself was my enemy, that's when I got healthier.
Wow. What a story you have to tell.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. What you must, I know you've presented in the United States, in all over, and then a couple of times in Europe. In fact, one of my clients who happens to be a medical doctor, a woman who struggles with some of these issues, heard you, I think, in Paris. Were you in Paris? What?
They heard my fantasy. No. Or maybe I should be looking for a lookalike imposter. No, I was actually I was in Amsterdam area and theoretically in England.
Theoretically. And what I mean, why do you say theoretically?
Well, I actually had a seminar planned. I had 75 participants. And when I got into customs, this is like 2 days after the Paris bombing, they asked me what I'm doing there. And I told them I'm there to do a training and vacation. Yeah. And they asked me if I had a visa. And I said, no, I have a passport. Well, they turned me away.
How disappointing.
What disappointing. It was horribly traumatic. And long story short, my son stayed, and it traumatized both of us. So I ended up flying back to America and doing a webinar that was presented in London. So what I tell people is I gave a training in London. I just wasn't in it.
Oh.
I wasn't. My feet weren't on the English soil. We're planning another training in about 4 months, so I'm going to get a second chance at this.
Okay.
So I gave a training in London, and my feet were actually planted in Amsterdam in a training.
So I guess all the securities went up because of the Paris bombing, because normally you should be able to get in with a passport.
Well, you know what? I can't blame people for following rules, but, man, I was pissed off.
Oh, sure.
I was thinking, I was saying, I'm just giving a training to a bunch of therapists. You know, I'm not.
Yeah.
And you know, Brits are good. I respect people that follow rules, even though I was really pissed off about it. And who's the idiot? The idiot is I mean, I'm being hard on myself, but I mean, I should have known that. And, you know, live and learn. I survived. I ended up, you know, I ended up fine. I laugh at it now. But I don't hold anyone accountable other than the people that bombed France that started all this horrible stuff.
Yes. Well, that's also a very healthy aspect of you, that you don't blame.
Oh, I do. I just get over it.
You get over it, okay.
No, I mean, I sound a lot. I mean, I am quite the normal person. I have my flaws. I make my mistakes. I try to be open. Just today in a meeting with one of my employees, he felt compelled to tell me what he thought was wrong with me. And I felt,
really?
Yeah, and that's because the way that I supervise, I allow people to say that.
Oh.
And I got defensive, and he says, there you go, you're getting defensive. And I caught myself, and I wrote on a piece of paper, I said, own it. And I kept looking at it, and we had a really good conversation. But the point of that is I'm, as much as my clients are work in progress, so am I. And I'm going to tell you more about what's good on radio and not tell you all the flaws. But I do try every day to be the best person I can, to take responsibility and be a role model. And I think everyone should do that. And I think that's...
I agree. I agree. And I try to do the same thing. And I, because of my age and my long experience, I end up being, in symbolically anyway, the good mother.
Yeah.
Who gives?
I can see that.
Yeah, I'm the good mother, and I'm giving permission to love each other, and also because of my specialty as a sex therapist, to have good sex.
You know what?
Oh, there's our music, Ross. I'll have you back in the new year if you'll come back.
I would love it. Thank you.
And thank you so much for our excellent show.
And, thank you so much. And be well, and all your listeners, love yourself. And
thank you. Thank
yourself.
You, Ross Rosenberg. Rosenberg. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.